Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Howdy, what's happening? How are you today? Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio here on a British Open Thursday. Coming live from the Quicken Loans Studio, national mortgage lender. Quicken Loans, apply simply, understand fully, and mortgage confidently. Lots to do. Oh, been watching golf all day. Oh, my God. Oh, boy. I got to tell you, very disappointed in Mr. Tiger Woods, who is starting to finish up. What is this, Mike, 17 or is this 18? I believe this is 17. And he's looking at about a good, that's got some meat on the bone. That looks like at least a 50-footer. I imagine it's for birdie. It looks like he looks short on the left there. Here's the deal. So the Open Championship, right? I used to hate it. I was telling this, I was doing an interview with one of our affiliates the other day. And it was a great question. And we're teeing up the Open Championship conversation. And it's funny because, you know, not growing up as a golf fan, I've talked about this a lot. Teek and I have talked about this, obviously. We started playing after college. And then, you know, when you start to have an appreciation for the game, you know, you start to, yeah, I mean, not everybody, but some people start to really dig and try to get a sense of the history. And I certainly tried to do that. And it's funny, when the Open Championship would first come on, it just, it felt, it was like nothing I've ever seen with my own eyes, stateside. And, you know, it felt like dark. It felt dank. It was always windy. Rain was always sideways. I just, the aesthetics of the event never lined up with my eyes. Didn't really like it. Last couple of years, maybe last decade or so, that's really changed. And so I could not wait to watch this today. So I start recording this, right? Now, by the way, with Tiki, Tiki's off today. Yesterday, I predicted that Tiger's going to win. And, you know, predictions are meaningless, let's be honest. But I rarely make golf predictions with any sort of oomph, any sort of, you know, real declarative nature, because it's a crapshoot. Hey, you kind of know who's playing well when you know, coming in. You know who's not. You know if the event or if the course suits a player's eye. There's certain things you could certainly help come to a determination as to whether or not you think your player's going to win. But I don't think, Mike, maybe you could check me on this, in the 5-plus years I've been on CBS Sports Radio, the only prediction that I've made specific to an event, not like this player will win a major this year, literally entering an event, was when I said that Sergio would win the Masters. And I was right.
You had one other sort of prediction.
Now, here's the buzzkill weighing in, of course.
No.
Couldn't let it just slide off his shoulder, D-cell.
No. This is a positive.
Oh, it's
positive. It actually enriched your wallet. You were a dollar richer.
Oh, that's right.
Thanks to Brendel Chambly saying that Lee Westwood would not win. I believe it was the Masters.
It was the Masters. Yeah,
yeah, I think Brandon, it was the Masters pretty, 3 years ago, 2 years ago.
A couple of years ago. I just jumped off that train a couple of years ago. You know, you keep knocking on the door. Eventually, either going to win or you're not. And I thought that his best golf kind of passed him. Yeah, that was fun with Chambly. So I did win money on that. But in terms of actually getting on the air and saying I thought a player was going to win, the only time I've done it with a major was Sergio. And I did it the other day with Tiki here on this show. And I said Tiger was going to win this event, Carnoustie. Not that he plays particularly well here. I don't know. I just had a sense he was going to play well. So the coverage, based on where I am, you know, work in New York, live in New Jersey, 1:30 Eastern, the Golf Channel starts piping in the coverage. I'm like, all right, I'm not getting up at 1. Now, if this was years ago, I may have actually got up at 1:30, jumped on the couch, you know, pre-kids, pre-marriage, and with one eye watched a few holes here. I said, no, and obviously different rules these days. So I recorded it, got up. Once I started getting a little functional this morning, I blasted through, you know, the first couple of hours, you know, Phil didn't play well, obviously. And I'm starting to see, I'm like, wow, there's a 66 on the board. There's a 67 on the board. There's a 68 on the board. This is early. It's like right before Tiger teed off at 10:21 Eastern. There's a bunch of 69s on the board. And then I watched the event, you know, a little deeper, a little more closely. What do you know? There's no wind. There's no rain. Fairways are like ice. Like ice. The fairways, think about this. Fairways are faster than the greens. It's true. You never see that. And to prove that, some balls are actually like wherever they land in the fairway, they're rolling 90 yards on the fairway from the moment that they actually settle for the first time. It's crazy. So I'm sitting here, I'm saying, you know what that means? Iron, 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 iron off the tee for Tiger Woods. So I'm further, you know, emboldened by my pick the other day. Then we start watching Tiger. First hole, birdie. I was going to start tweeting away. I said, let me just settle back and see what happens here. Second hole, par. Third hole, par. He just looked good. By the way, Mike, if I missed something with Tiger, just pipe in. Let me know. I know he missed that long putt. Hopefully he hit on the leg putt. He had about 5 feet to go. Third hole, par. And I think that was 17. He's finishing up soon. And when we get Tiger sound, we'll play it for you. Fourth hole. And this is where I really felt good about my pick. Fourth hole, goes iron off the tee, smashes one, I don't know, whatever the distance was, 280, 290, maybe three. And it's actually going toward the burn. Now, if you can imagine this, if you saw it, you know, but if you can imagine this, it's going right toward the burn. And that's a problem. Last second, it hits a last second slope. It funnels back into the fairway, right? Monster break, disaster averted early. Bangs the second shot tight, bangs in the birdie putt, boom. So we've started birdie, par, par, bird. And I'm sitting there and I'm saying, we are golden. And here we are, what happened again? Tiger Woods hits the back nine, and Tiger Woods seemingly forgets how to play golf. Now, to be fair, based on what he teed off and based on the scores of his peers who are on the course now, there's a lot of black numbers. There's really very few birdies out there. Wind's picked up. Things have stiffened up a little bit. Tough to hold them. Greens aren't as receptive, all that golf stuff. But I'm very confused as to what I've seen today so far from Tiger Woods, because he was so in control of his swing. Every single fairway, 80% just about, at least the first 12, 13 holes, in the middle of the fairway, off the tee. And here he is. What is he, Mike? Even? He's even par. And I'm saying, okay, that's the kind of day, especially Tiger, who struggles with the driver off the tee, which he didn't have to use today. I think he used a 3-wood once, maybe a driver once, primarily irons, as I said. You walk off the golf course the way you played the first 5, 6, 7 holes, and you're even par. Whoa. I lost a little confidence here, Mike. Lost a little zest for Tiger Woods today.
If it makes you feel any better, Jordan Spieth had a very similar back nine.
Yeah, I know he did.
Four over in his last four holes. Double bogey, bogey, par, bogey.
Yeah, what do you go, from -1 to +4? I think it was
plus
a five.
+3.
I was a 4 or 5, yes. Four-shot swing. We had Jordan post-round, right? He spoke after the round. Let's hear Jordan Spieth, see what he had to say. Here's Jordan Spieth.
Yeah,
and, you know, Jordan's having a weird season, isn't he? But let's face it. I mean, as much as we love Jordan, let's get back to Tiger Woods. That's just a momentary diversion from our Tiger Woods conversation here. Oh, man. You know, it's so funny because, like, there's certain – and I think it's certainly different at the PGA Championship, which is usually a birdie fest. The Masters, not too long. Well, it's a great event. You get a lot of birdies, get a lot of low scores for sure. The U.S. Open, historically. The Open Championship, historically. You got to grind. So it's odd. Like, if moments after I'd made my pick on the air, if I would have found out that Tiger was going to, I think he just hit the fairway on 18th there. Yeah, so he just teed off fairway again with an iron. If I would have had a score pop up and it would have said, hey, moments after I made the pick, Tiger shot an even, I feel pretty good about it. But there's different types of even. Not that I could relate to anything that's even par on a golf course, but just watching. There's the even par where you scratch and you claw and you fight and you hustle and you make a few long bombs when really you should be staring at bogey and you somehow pull out a four, or, you know, you have a 6-hand save and you're staring at a double or a triple and you somehow navigate it. You get a bogey. I mean, those are, when you just don't have your swing, those are good bogeys. He's got a birdie this, man. This would be incredibly disheartening. And listen, the one thing about Tiger Woods, and this is a little bit annoying, he always said, you listen to Tiger Woods post-round, whether he shot a 75 or a 65, it's always the same. Oh, I hit the ball great. I just didn't make a couple of putts. Like he's, I don't know that he's ever really fully honest in his post-round analysis. Every once in a while, he'll just say, I stunk. But so I guess that's obviously blunt and very honest. But he's almost paints it too positively, I think, when we all know that he didn't necessarily play that way that the score might state. I want to hear what he says today. I want to hear Tiger. And I'm going to guess, even if he birdies 18 and he comes in at minus one, I'm going to guess that Tiger Woods paints not a bleak picture. That's not in his DNA. I think he'll be pretty ticked off the way he finished today and the way he played. And, you know, now, I mean, this is out of my pay scale. I don't know. I mean, I'm just happy when the ball goes straight when I hit it. I don't know what the deal is on the back nine. I mean, you want to start to get into the psychology of Tiger Woods? I don't know. I mean, if it's that much of a mental deterrent, like, you know, if you're not sure of your ability to win and compete at this level, don't you think you'd kind of take that to the first tee when the nerves are kind of ratcheted up? Like, why does it always kick out on the back nine? Why is this happening? It's a ridiculous trend, and I don't have the answer for it, Mike.
If Tiger struggles mightily, because we said yesterday this might be his best chance since his return to win a major.
Yep.
If he struggles, this is a links course. If he struggles, if he doesn't make the cut, or even if he makes the cut.
Oh, he's making the cut.
I'm just saying.
He's, okay, go ahead.
If he doesn't, yep. Or if he makes it, but he doesn't, he's not competing on Sunday.
Like, if he finishes 37th.
Do you give him any chance?
Yeah. Yeah.
To still get that 15th?
Like, you got to... I do. To get one more sure, to beat Jack.
Mm. No, not to beat Jack. To get one more, maybe two more.
I do. You got to understand,
I mean, he was
Mike.
So confident coming into this one. He was playing strong, and he said, this is my best chance.
Well, didn't he start... No, the U.S. Open, he started with a triple bogey on the first hole.
No, but in non-major tournaments, he was playing pretty well. He played pretty well in the Masters, but he played well in other tournaments, top five finishes.
The Valspar.
Yeah, and if he comes into this and he just lays an egg, and beforehand, so confident, healthy, best chance to win a major. I mean, it just kind of feels like we're running out of chances.
You got to understand. No, listen, I hear where you're coming from. And you got to understand, though, and this is not, trust me, this is not what I don't say this to pat myself on the back, but you have to understand this. No matter what radio show you listen to, all right, no matter what TV show you watch, I'm telling you, because I know everybody on the air in this business, that's at least the prominent shows, most of the people that you believe in, that you love, get your football from, and all the other sports, free agency, baseball, local markets, trust me when I tell you that most of these people know nothing about golf. They know nothing. So they are so, I mean, they just, like, whichever way the wind's blowing, that's really determines how they assess, you know, the direction of Tiger Woods and what lies ahead. If you remember on this show, the first thing that gave me the confidence to really get on the air, I'm talking this is back in March, and I was tweeting with my buddy, Brandel Chambly, about this, and, you know, he was backing me up, and he's a data guy, he's a numbers guy, he's a metrics guy. Come on, Tiger, bang that near the stick. Let me just take a look at this real quick. It's up in the air. Nah, he's got a long putt. Settles. He'll par. He'll get down to two from there. He's about 35, 40 feet away. Looks like it's pretty straight. He'll finish even par. And I remember watching Tiger's swing early and, like, seeing the ball speed and seeing the swing speed. And, you know, again, I always kid around. I say, stay in your lane when I talk about LeVar Ball. I should stay in my lane when it comes to golf. But I've worked hard to educate myself, and I know that Tiger Woods, the distance is there. So I was buoyed by the fact that I knew he was healthy for the first time in 4 or 5 years. So to answer Mike's question, Mike, and here's the thing, no matter what show you get, let's say if he makes the cut, and he's making the cut, let's see if he makes the cut, and let's say he wallows over the weekend. Let's say he puts up a 37th place finish, which I said before. I'm telling you, invariably, you flip on your favorite show on Monday, and they'll leave him for dead. They'll throw him in the golf graveyard. Tiger's done. I told you. He's not going to get it. He can't do it. His body's not going to. He doesn't know how to play on the back nine. Forget about Jack. He'll never get another major. He's finished. He's 42. He's done. Surgeries have taken over. Attrition. No, I'm not saying that because he's crushing the ball.
What about showing up with tape on his neck?
Yeah, right. That
Does
was
that scare you?
Well, no, that yeah, it did when I first saw it. But, you know, everybody on the broadcast said it was basically just a stiff neck. I mean, if it was something structural, I don't know that he would have been hitting 7 irons, 290, like he hit today. I'm not too worried about that. Although, you know, again, when you see something on Tiger that is either a brace or tape, it certainly does make you look twice. So, all right, 1-855-212-4227. I've droned on enough about this. Listen, no matter what happens, he can balloon to a 75 tomorrow. It's never been a short-term reaction on my part. But, you know, people, you, you really inhale golf differently. You know, it's you might parachute in on the majors. You might watch every shot, like I try to, for sure. Where would you stand? You know, how much confidence would you lose if Tiger blows up tomorrow? P.S. He won't. Or blows up over the weekend? I don't think he will. P.S. But are you that brittle where you just kind of fluctuate and you just can't quite make a determination which Tiger is which? I'm standing by my guy. He can still pound the ball, and he will still be a factor. I'm not going to waver off that. 855-212-4227. Hey, by the way, Julio Jones and the Falcons, they got a problem. We'll get to this a little later in the show. Joe Morgan coming up this hour. Looking forward to that. Hall of Famer, second baseman, back-to-back MVPs with the Big Red Machine. Dan Hicks will join us live from Carnoustie coming up in hour number two. And I've got, and Mike and I were talking about this before the show, I've got the perfect response. So actually be response 2.0 because he already responded. From Mike Trout and Nike to the commissioner. It's a winner. You'll love it. Tiki and Tierney, some golf calls coming up. CBS Sports Radio. All right, CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line is 1-855-212-4227. Brought to you by Geico. Hey, everybody, quick way to save a little money. Switch to Geico. Whether it's homeowners, renters, or motorcycle insurance, you can get it all at geico.com. All right, 24 minutes past the hour. Busy Thursday. Open Championship. Third major of the season. And they're flipping the whole major season, the whole major schedule next year. What was it again? They're doing, they're pushing up the world. I know that the PGA is going to go before the Masters. Oh, is it before or after the Masters?
After the Masters, after the Masters, between the U.S. Open.
And, but they're also, aren't they bumping up the WGC? Oh, or no.
They're cutting out one of the FedEx tournaments.
Which is smart because that overlaps football, then nobody watches that at that point. I like the way they're actually shaping up the new season. By the way, Tiger got down in two. I mean, it looked like it was pretty straightforward. Nice leg putt. Got to about 2-3 feet. Popped it in. Even par. And I did see him go, if you're watching on TV, Mike, you see him going like this? Now, is he doing that? Like, is like a little built-in excuse? Oh, my neck kind of. Because he knows the camera's on him. He knows he's getting ready to talk to the media. I mean, that's the thing. These guys are savvy like that. I wouldn't be surprised if Tiger's, let me put on a little show for the folks at home, and I grinded out an even par despite, oh, man, that neck was an issue today, boy. I'm a warrior.
You mean like LeBron showing up to a press conference with a cast on his arm?
Yeah, LeBron, exactly like that. There's some crazy stuff with Kawhi that we'll get to a little later. Now, here's the dark horse team for you. The Brooklyn Nets for Kawhi Leonard. Wow. So we'll do that a little later on. Joe Morgan's going to join us coming up next. What is Joe doing? Obviously a Hall of Famer. He's just chilling. He's earned the right to just chill. He's been off TV now for a couple of years. Joe Morgan, you know, he's a name. He's a little bit before my time, but with that Big Red Machine, I'm more of an 80s kid. Obviously, the 70s, historically, I certainly know what they were, but I can't really say I remember watching him play at that point. This guy was a beast. I mean, he had back-to-back MVPs. Big Red Machine, Johnny Bench. Oh, my God. Pete Rose, Tony Perez. Hopefully Joe's in a good mood. I've heard Joe can go one of two ways. Could be a little ornery or it could be nice and chatty. Hopefully we get the latter. And if we get the former, hopefully we'll be able to transform him into the latter. But he's one of the all-time greats for sure. Interesting baseball trade. It's funny. I said on the show the other day, the Indians absolutely had to address the bullpen. They did. They made a trade with the Padres. So baseball actually starts tonight, which is quirky. How is there one game tonight? Makes no sense. Like, why? There's only one game, right? Yeah, the Cardinals and the Cubs. Pretty good matchup. Carlos Martinez and Hendricks. But why would you have one game on Thursday and then the full slate Friday, Saturday, Sunday? I mean, it's obviously a four-game series, so maybe that's your answer.
That's it probably right there.
Maybe it's the only four-game series.
Yeah, because you go Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you have your travel day Monday, and then start back up and recycle.
Well, that's the imbalance of the 31 teams right there. That's the imbalance. If they can, when they rectify that, because they're going to eventually expand. And we've talked about this a lot on the show. And we had Manfred on last March, right before the start of the 2017 season. We hit a multitude of issues, and one of which we really probed deeply was expansion. And I got to tell you, the more I look at these names of possible destinations, forget about Mexico. I would not do that personally. I wouldn't do that, with all due respect to Mexico. Nashville's an interesting one. It's an interesting one. Mike, where did you go on that bachelor party? Was that Nashville? Is it really that good?
It's a great spot for a bachelor party.
Yeah.
A lot of bachelorette. They call it the Vegas of the East.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of fun. The Titans Stadium is maybe like a mile outside of the main downtown area, Main Street.
Yeah.
You also have the arena for the Predators. It's literally right downtown. You have Main Street. It's all these bars and clubs, music playing everywhere, and then the arena for the Predators is right there.
Mm.
So there's space enough to add another baseball stadium, probably near where the Titans are at.
Yeah.
But it's everything is close, and there's music everywhere. There's bourbon distilleries because it's like right there in Tennessee.
Yeah, yeah.
So lots of drinking, lots of sun, and lots of fun, interesting people.
Well, if I recall, wasn't that a co-ed bachelor party? Not a co-ed.
Let's not get into that.
No, wasn't it? No,
a
seriously,
joint.
It was, right?
Yeah.
Joint.
It was bad.
How terrible. Bad isn't good or bad isn't bad?
Bad isn't bad.
Really?
Bad.
Yeah, too tame?
Not even tame. Just, you know, the bachelorette girls, A, were not our type, and B, not fun.
Oof.
Yeah, there was more fighting. There was more fighting than there was enhancement of the party.
You know, that's what, not you, but that's what they get. Who does a co-bachelor, like a joint bachelorette party?
For the record, it was his second.
Still.
Yeah.
The way it sounds like, you might be getting ready for third if it went off that bad. I mean, it
doesn't sound like their marriage is great. Just, you know, the party itself was, we had fun.
Yeah, well,
they,
of course.
They didn't.
You could break away. You have no obligation. Were you in the wedding party? You were in the wedding party, so you had a little obligation. I don't know. These cells starting to inch down that. Not yet. Not looking yet at rings. It will be soon.
I've done a bachelor party in Nashville as well.
But was it co-joined?
No, it was not.
Yeah. And I bet you had a great time.
Awesome time.
Attaboy, what a difference.
I left Nashville actually saying I could live here.
Really?
I loved it there.
Really? Well, I got good news for you. We're starting a new station. We're going to ship you out to Tennessee. And you can run the shows out there. Oh, my God.
So just out of curiosity.
Yes, Mike.
So I'm just looking at the leaderboard. We're talking about Tiger and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at the leaderboard. I mean, I'm seeing Kevin Kisner, Eric Van Ruin, Xander Lombard, Brandon Stone, Ryan Moore, Brent. I don't know any of these guys.
By the way, real quick, Kisner's actually a really good player.
Yeah,
other names.
Yeah. I mean, and Tony Finau is very good. John Rahm is good.
Yep.
But Danny Willett's decent. There's a lot of good players on here. Justin Thomas is minus two.
Mm-hmm.
But there's not a lot of guys at the top of this list that's significantly ahead of Tiger. Maybe one or two shots ahead of Tiger at even. So, like, even par with how tough the back nine was today, five shots back, I get it, but he still has a shot, no?
Oh, you know, he does. What I was expressing to start the show is that I really thought he had a chance to shoot a 65. I mean, I know it doesn't translate. We're going to move on from this, get to Joe Morgan, get to some football, do some Kawhi Leonard. I'm not going to do 3 hours of Tiger. But when you're watching golf, And you know golf, even if you're not a good golfer, but you know golf. You know when a player's striping it, and you know when a player's in rhythm, and you know when a player just doesn't score, just doesn't really get a score that's reflective of the way he hit the ball. And I think that's certainly, I know that absolutely applies to Tiger Woods today. You know, when you come out bird par birdie, and, you know, you're 2-under through four, and you're cranking mid-irons and 7-irons off the tee, and you haven't touched a driver yet off the tee, and your touch around the green is deft. It's on point. You know, you're rolling your putts nicely, leg putts. You're right around the hole. That's, at that level, that's usually when you shoot a 66, even a 67. But a 71? No, he's definitely not out of it. I'm just saying, he's going to lament, and I want to hear his post. That's the one thing when we get back to Tiger a little later. That's what we will circle back for. When we get his post-round sound, I want to hear it. Because I'm telling you right now, you could bet on this. He is going to absolutely express real disappointment in his score. Because he played pretty well for most of the day. Ack, what's going on, brother? How are you today?
Did you see Brooks Koepka's day?
He shot plus one if I'm not.
Yes.
Plus one, right?
But he was 41 on the front nine, 31 on the back nine.
Wow, the exact opposite.
Yeah.
So he lit up the back nine.
Double bogeys on 6 and 8.
I think
five and eight.
Okay. I was going to say 6 of par 5, I think.
Bogeys on 7 and 9.
Mm-hmm.
Birdies on 10, 12, 13, 14, 17. He bogeyed 16 and parred 15.
He's a big dude, man.
Yeah.
He hits the heck out of
it. I mean, talk about an up and down day to recover from that front nine to have such an incredible back nine to be where he is.
And who else? What do you have? Spieth plus one, Phil was plus two.
Yeah.
It's funny. Everybody, Tiger was terrible. He shot even par. Yeah. Some of the best players in the world shot worse.
Tough time on that. He got off to a good – now, his opening rounds in the last six events haven't been great, but he got off to a good start. He was two under
through
making
four.
A turn.
Yeah, and 2 under through four.
Yeah.
Two early birdies.
Yeah, and then he had some trouble on the back.
He had at least three bogeys on the first five holes on the back.
Yeah,
which has plagued him for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So you're as big a baseball fan as I am. You go back a couple of years, but let me ask you this: we're gonna have Joe Morgan coming up next on the show. Big Red Machine, the pantheon of all time dynasties. You know what's crazy? As you ponder that. I'm not sure that I'm prepared to say this, but they might not even be the best dynasty of their decade.
The A's. The A's, yeah. It's true.
The A's.
They were
Catfish Hunter, Joe Rudy,
Reggie. They didn't win. They lost to the A's.
Sal Bando?
Yeah. They lost to the
A's. And the A's beat them, by the way, head-to-head.
That's it. But
what was that, 74?
72.
72.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
the Reds got two champions. They swept the Yankees
75-76. But the Reds and the Dodgers... accounted for all but one division title in the 70s, I believe, if I'm correct in that.
Well, the Yankees had back-to-back with 77. So it's crazy. The 70s, yeah, you're right. I mean, the 70s, the A's early, the Reds the middle portion, the Yankees back-to-back 77, 78. 79 was...
Pirates.
Was the Pirates, We Are Family. And then the Dodgers were pretty dominant the first part of the early 80s.
Yeah, the core four from that team of Perez, Rose, Morgan, and Bench. I mean, those are obviously four all-time greats.
No question.
So, no question. You know, that was a unique team.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very unique team.
All right, well, we'll talk about that. Current state of the game, Mike Trout situation with the commissioner, some of the young players, the talent. Joe Morgan's up next. Axe update coming at you right now. All righty, tonight at 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific, tune into CBS Sports Network and follow the stories of struggle and strength of some of the world's greatest athletes. It's the 2018 CrossFit Games, something that nobody on this show outside of Tiki would have a chance to compete in. It's Road to the Fittest on the 24-hour home of CBS Sports. All right, so as soon as Tiger speaks post-round, we'll get it to you here. I'm looking forward to this conversation. You know, one of the things that I loved, this is a time capsule from my childhood. Many of you as well, I'm sure. Saturdays would entail going to play Little League. I'm told when you first start playing Little League, first grade, there was no T-ball when I was growing up. At least not my area. And we'd come back. My dad would go get cold cuts, get roast beef, get a little cheese, get some soda, get the pretzels. We'd go in the basement. We would watch This Week in Baseball. We'd watch the Baseball Bunch, and we'd watch the Game of the Week. And a lot of times, my next guest was right in the middle of it all because he was one of the stars. 10-time All-Star, back-to-back MVPs, Key Spoke in the Big Red Machine. It's the great Joe Morgan. Joe, Tiki and Tierney, but it's Tiki is out today, but welcome to our show. How are you today, Joe?
I am doing great. How about you?
Phenomenal. You know, I need a little help on this, and understandably you'll be biased, I would imagine. The decade of the 70s, I don't know, maybe it's the first thing that popped into my mind, but I look at the 70s in totality, and I see the A's with that great dynasty early. I see you guys in the middle with the great, iconic Hall of Famers that you played with. I see the Yankees going back-to-back in 77, 78. You can make the very, very strong point, without much ammunition to contest it, I don't think, that the 70s had the most dynasties, like the most powerful teams of any decade in the history of baseball.
I agree with you, and the reason I agree with you is because the game was played a little differently then, and it took a little special players and teams to be able to form those kind of dynasties.
Hmm.
You know, the game is a little different today in that, you know, it's almost that old Earl Weaver theory, pitching, defense, and a three-run homer, except they don't have the defense anymore.
Uh-huh.
But now it's more about, you know, hitting home runs, and that's why there are so many strikeouts.
Yep.
And the game has changed, and that's why I don't think you're going to see any kind of dynasties like that anymore. The Astros are trying to build one, and they come close, but they also play a very good game. They don't just go for home runs. They play a good game, but I think that's one of the reasons you're not going to see dynasties like those anymore.
Interesting. You know, it's crazy, and I watch baseball every night. I follow the top prospects, or I try to. Obviously, it's hard to follow every prospect in the minors, but I got a working feel for most of them, or at least the ones that are ready to hit the bigs. And you rarely hear, you know, as so-and-so steps into the box and so-and-so's a five-tool player. Like, right. Joe, you don't hear that anymore. It's crazy. And I said something on the show the other day, and I'd love to get your thoughts on this. I got a simple suggestion to Manfred. Push the fences back, all right? Because what you don't see is a guy scoring from first base on a double in the gap, or the well-executed relay where there's a play at the plate, you know, center field at the shortstop, gunning somebody down at the dish. The parks are too small. Make every line minimum 330 or 335. Push back the gaps. Push back center field. And let's get some speed going here, Joe.
You're the first person, to be honest with you, that has said these things to me. And look, when I played, think about it now, when you're talking about the 70s, most of the ballparks were multi-purpose stadiums.
Mm-hmm.
They played football in it and baseball. So the stadiums were big, and the ballparks were big. You know, all the things you're talking about, the action plays, balls in the gap, guy trying to score from first on a double, all those things were, you know, there in those days. Stealing a base, hit and run, even bunting and stuff every once in a while. All those things were action plays that took place, and, of course, stealing bases. Now the analytics people say that a stolen base is not a good play. I know. That's what I'm trying to figure all this out.
They would have sent you down to the minors, Joe. You stole too many bases.
Thank you. But, I mean, I'm like you. I mean, I'm not, you know, there should be more action in the game, and there's not. I mean, even in the All-Star game the other night, there were 10 home runs, and people, you know, chicks dig the long ball, they say, so it was fun.
Mm-hmm.
But there were 25 or so strikeouts as well, right?
Yeah.
So the ball wasn't in play. You didn't see infielders making plays. You didn't see, you know, things happening, even in the All-Star game. And those are the best players in both leagues playing. So something is wrong with that picture. And the picture says to me is that we've given up all the other stuff for the home run. I was mentioning the other day that I watched, I read the box scores every day.
Yeah.
And I saw a box score where a guy had four at bats, struck out four times. Okay.
Yeah.
The next day, he struck out the first two times. Mm. Then he hit a home run.
Uh-huh.
And all they talked about was how far the home run went.
Oh.
Okay. So they've made it where strikeouts are not a negative anymore. And so the game is different. I mean, that's just the way it is. And, look, I can't say it was better in my day. It was different. That's all I'm going to say.
I got you.
It was a different game.
Yeah.
And that's why the things you talk about, the dynasties and the things that follow, they're not going to happen anymore. You're just not going to see those things. Mm. And, unfortunately, you know, it's more like, I guess, a video game, and that's nothing wrong with that, except when you – a video game, young kids love video games, but they're not buying the tickets.
That's right. Pops and the uncles and they're reaching into the pockets.
Thank you.
I want to throw this at you. Joe, you have an incredible project coming out that I'm really interested in, and it's a movie about racial segregation in the mid-50s, a little league team. It sounds incredible, but before we really delve into that, I think a good way to kind of ease into it is to get into Josh Hader's tweets. And I'm curious.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, Joe, you know this as well as I do. The court of public opinion on social media is merciless. If they could, they would actually probably hang him or, you know, or stone him to death. It's without mercy. If he was your teammate and you played with Josh Hader and you're playing now, all right, rather than the 60s, 70s, and 80s,
right,
what would you say to him? How would you handle it, Joe?
Well, you know, and that's a difficult question, and I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. I don't know exactly how I would handle it right now. You know, Josh is probably going to sit and talk with his teammates, not just the African-American teammates. He needs to talk to all of his teammates, because otherwise you're assuming that the white teammates agree with you if you just talk to the African-American or Latin teammates.
That's a good point.
So you need to talk to everyone,
mm-hmm.
okay, and just – you know, try to explain what happened and so forth. It's very difficult, you know, in a team sport, because teammates are supposed to be teammates, just that. You look them, you take them for who they are, what they are, and go on about your business. I can't remember a name, but there was a guy with the Eagles
mm-hmm.
who said, you know, all kind of racist stuff, that he would fight all and beat up all the, you know, black guys and all that kind of stuff. yet he stayed on the team for the next 3 years.
Yeah.
And so I don't know how you would handle it, and I'm not going to lie to you and say I know how I would handle it. I would not be happy. I'll just start with that.
Yep.
But how I handle it from there on then would be how Hader handles it going forward. Okay? If what his discussion is with the entire team and what his, you know, explanations are, look, I would listen to him. We are different maybe 8 years later than we were. I'm a different person than I was 7 years ago, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Not from the race standpoint, anything like that, because I was brought up to accept all people. But I am different in a lot of other ways, and maybe he is different in that way than he was before. So I don't know. Again, I think it's going to depend on how he approaches his teammates and how they feel.
That's a good answer. By the way, that was Riley Cooper that you from the Eagles.
Yeah, that's who it was, Riley Cooper, exactly.
Joel Morgan is with us here, of course. Brilliant 22-year career, a couple of World Series, couple of MVPs, Hall of Famer, just incredible. All right, so I'm going to read the summary, and I have the sheet in front of me here. This looks like a great project. Hank Aaron's involved, Cal Ripken, yeah. Gary Sheffield, Davey Johnson, who was in the studio a couple of weeks ago here on Tiki and Tierney. Back in 1955, when racial segregation defined the South, two groups of 12-year-old boys stepped onto a baseball field in a nonviolent act of cultural defiance that would change the course of history and challenge their own perceptions 60 years later. I'm going to give it to you, but what I love about this part, Joe, boy, when you're 10, 11, 12 years old, hate, and you know, it hasn't permeated your world yet because you're still pure. And the fact that it's, and I love that, and that's what's great about being a kid. And the fact that it's 12-year-olds doing this, it makes it more powerful, more potent. Tell us more about the project.
Well, the project is, that was a great synopsis right there of reading what's in it. In 1955, you know, the African-American kids, black kids, could not play against the white kids in Pensacola, Florida, and Orlando. Two teams, the black team, the white team, decided they would play each other. And here, you have to give a lot of credit to the families of those kids, because if one of the white kids' families said, I'm not going to let little Johnny play, or one of the black kids' family would have said, I'm not going to let Willie play, then that game wouldn't have happened. So you have to give the family credit as well.
Great point.
But your point that you made about 12-year-old kids, they do not, the racism, the hate, all that hasn't built up on them at that stage. And so I think it was great because the film is about this game, but it's also about what came after that game, what happened in 75, what happened in 2000, you know, the civil rights movements, et cetera.
Yep.
The great thing is these two teams, the members who are still alive, they got together again at that park just to, you know, have a reunion. And all those kids, you know, when they started talking to each other and whatever, they say seems like it was only yesterday that they remember everything about that game and the people that they played and everything. So they sat down with each other and talked about it from each side. And I think that is great for people to look and watch because, you know, we're in a situation now where the country seems like it's going in a different direction. We're being divided more than ever before. And those kids helped bring a sense of focus to bringing people together, just that group of kids. And all they wanted to do was play baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And now here's the reason that it struck me so, you know, deep, is because at that same time, 1955, I was 12 years old. And I was living in California. I grew up in Oakland, California. I was playing baseball every day with black kids, white kids, Asian kids, Hispanic kids. I was playing with everyone. And I never even thought about the fact that the kids in the South didn't have the same opportunities that I had and weren't going to have a chance to play in the big leagues, et cetera, because they couldn't play against each other. The white kids couldn't play against the black kids, et cetera. So it really kind of hit home for me because I was the same age as those kids, you know what I mean? And when you sit and you talk with those guys, when you sit down and talk to the people on both sides, I talk to, you know, people who were there for the screening, you know, from the African-American team and from the white team. And, I mean, it's amazing talk to them and how they are today. And I think that game
yep.
had a impact on how they saw race relationships going forward.
Phenomenal project. Absolutely phenomenal. And I wish we had more time. That is great. I'll actually follow that up a little bit next hour. But Joe Morgan, that was terrific. Thank you, brother. Appreciate it.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.